Abdullah al-Malki is a Canadian citizen who's experienced detention in Syria firsthand. He was detained, interrogated, and tortured for 2 years after the Canadian government shared false information about him with Syrian officials. He now resides in Ottawa with his wife and children. But his experiences will stay with him for a lifetime. Syrian forces use torture methods such as falca, which entails being beaten on the soles of the feet. FSRN's Lillian Bokdor spoke with Abdullah al-Malki in Montreal.
Can you tell me why you were in Syria in 2002 and what happened there?
My grandmother at the time was over 90 years old. She was very sick. Most of the family members were going to Syria to see her. I was on a trip, on a business trip to the Middle East. It was, I think, about an hour or something flight to Damascus, and decided to take that flight, see my grandmother. My parents were as well in Syria to see her. And that was, I guess, the biggest mistake I did.
What happened when you got to Syria?
So when I arrived in at the airport, I was almost immediately detained, taken to something called Fara Falastin, المخابرات العسكرية, for military intelligence services. The place itself is extremely scary. The name is scary for people. The type of torture used there, the type of interrogation methods, the harsh, some of them unbelievable. You know, you wouldn't think that a human being would do something like this. So I got there. They blindfolded me, and almost in no time, the torture session started. That lasted till the next day.
And how long did this torture go on?
Well, the torture went... there were torture sessions on and off. The first 3 days, I had almost a continuous torture. The first torture session was continuous from first day till the next day, and then on the third day, it was another method they used. The first day and second day, it was fela. Third day, they used dulab, a tire, car tire, torture method using car tire. A couple of months after that, I went through another round of severe torture sessions for a few days. But at the same time, when I wasn't in a torture chamber, I was kept in a cell underground. That the cell itself was physical and mental torture 24/7. The size of the cell was smaller than a grave. It's underground, so it felt like a grave, dark. It measured 3 feet wide, 6 feet deep, and 7 feet high. Very cold in the winter, extremely hot in the summer. Hearing constantly the people being tortured was extremely painful, unbearable. So I actually started trying to sleep during the day and get up during the night because you hear the screams at night. The food was terrible. Doing the most basic that a human being need to relieve himself and go to the washroom was only allowed very limited time at very specific times. Hearing footsteps, my heart would sink, afraid that they're coming to open my door and pull me up again for more torture interrogation. It is like being thrown in a grave and buried alive.
While this was happening to you, what information were you given about why this was happening to you, and what do you know about Canada's specific role in your torture?
They sat down, met with my interrogators, and then after that I was interrogated and threatened with severe torture, and I was being interrogated based on the information that they gave them. A lot of it's false. The police in Ottawa refused to give my family my criminal record, which I don't have a criminal record. Eventually, with the pressure of the lawyer, the RCMP issued a letter to the family saying that I was not wanted in Canada. My parents took that letter, flew to Damascus with that letter, and gave it to the Syrian officials to show that actually what they were getting from the Canadian officials in secret, I guess, was contrary to what actually, I wasn't wanted in Canada. And after that, I was released. A short period after that, I was released.
So what's happened since you've come back to Canada?
Well, the government has been, their actions has been an extension, unfortunately, of their behavior before Syria and during Syria. Very insensitive. Even though now we know that the Canadian government and its agencies were complicit in my torture, in my detention, and my interrogation. We got, after a lot of pushing, a lot of public pressure, a lot of work, we got the first thing was the United Nations report calling on the Canadian government to do an investigation. Then we got the O'Connor Commission, which recommended that an investigation be launched. Then the government launched the Yacapuchi inquiry, which was totally secretive, yet at least we got some information out of it, which confirmed the complicity of the Canadian government. And then after that, reacting on that report, the parliament voted passed in the majority vote a recommendation for an apology to be issued for compensation and that the Canadian government should do everything in its powers, nationally and internationally, to correct all that misinformation that was spread about my family and I. Unfortunately, this has been over a year ago, and until today, the Canadian government has not acted on the will of the highest authority in Canada, the Canadian Parliament.
So what are you doing now, and how has your life been since you've come back?
In short, in one sentence, my life has been destroyed. My company has been destroyed. Professionally, even if I wanted to work as an engineer, I can't because of the mental damage that I got and inability to concentrate and do math and other things. Because of the memory loss as well. Now, what I can do is actually spread awareness in Canada of what needs to be done with everything we know now, all the information we have about the complicity of the Canadian government in my case. And it's worthy to note that my case is one of a pattern of cases. There are at least 4 publicly well-known cases, documented cases, and there are more. Some of them are not that public and people don't know about them. People don't want to go public with them. And we don't have a single government official held accountable.
Would that bring you some peace if these people were held accountable at this point?
Would it bring me peace? I don't know. If it happens, I'll know.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was FSRN's Lillian Bokhtor speaking to Syrian-born torture survivor Abdallah Al-Malki. When Al-Malki gives talks about his experiences, he shows line drawings of the torture used on him. You can see those drawings on our website.